seekers. Welcome to the Malloy program. I don't have anything right now on Anthony Weiner. Maybe later in the program. Oh my God. They just won't let up, will they? They just won't let up on this poor schmuck. It's just, Today is an anniversary. 10 years ago, boy, time rushes by when you're going broke and sinking into poverty and your empire is falling apart. 10 years ago today, that Bush signed what has come to be known as the Bush tax cuts. Remember that? What were you doing 10 years ago today? Huh? This day in 2001, he's passed a second round of 2003. And I don't know, do you remember what he said when he did this? He promised that the tax cuts would bring prosperity and growth. Jesus Christ. How's that prosperity and growth thing working out for you, America? Remember what he said? Do you remember this? Clinton, for all his faults, handed Bush budget surpluses as far as the eye could see and the national debt disappearing in the same 10-year period. What was it back then? A couple of trillion, 3 trillion? Doesn't matter. It's just zeros after a number. It doesn't mean a damn thing. But Bush and Cheney and the Bush crime family, the entire, and you remember somebody made the comment about now the adults are going to be in charge? I'll be damned. 10 years ago, prosperity and growth. Woo! Aren't we doing great? Huh? Of course, it was Clinton that let the dogs out when he signed the end of Glass-Steagall and allowed the banking bastards, the real thieves, the people who really should be put up against the wall in this country. And what then, Mike? Shot? No. Pantsed. They should be put up against a wall in Lower Manhattan on Wall Street. And pantsed. But it was Clinton that let the dogs out, those dogs, so they could rip this country into shreds. And by Jesus, it only took them about 10 years to destroy everything from about 1997 till about 2007. That's all it took for the banksters, the real filthy bastards, to destroy everything. Take a look around. How's it look? How's it feel? For so many of us in what used to be called the middle class, lower part of it, but the middle class nonetheless, for so many of us, that jive-ass turkey American dream is no longer operative. I defy you, if you are in the what remains of the middle class, or the former middle class, I defy you, and this is kind of sad, I'm not trying to be a bastard here, because I don't know how I'm going to tell my 7-year-old this either, but sit down and tell your child, listen, work hard, go to school, be a good person, and you'll get ahead, because this is America. Huh? Doesn't that sound phony now? Oh, I know a lot of parents are still telling their kids that fantasy, but you know, unless you can get them into Princeton, if you can get them into Princeton or Yale or Harvard or University of Pennsylvania or, you know, one of the Ivy League schools or whatever, or get the little darlings into law school. You got $40,000-$50,000 a year to send them to a prestigious law school. You can't send them to John Marshall Law School. I don't think that even exists anymore. Does John Marshall still exist, Kathy? Oh, it does still exist. That's night school. It's all night school. They're right here in Atlanta? Oh, okay. How's that prosperity and growth thing working, America? Every day, the news is worse. Home foreclosures at an all-time high. unemployed people for extended periods of time worse than the Depression. All because Clinton let the dogs out and George Bush and Dick Cheney engineered the most massive transfer of wealth in the history of this country. From the middle and working classes to the rich. So when you hear Republicans talking about, well, these Democrats want to transfer wealth. They want to, it's communism, socialism. They want to take from the rich. That's what they want to do. How do you listen to that, Mr. or Ms. Republican, without peeing your drawers from laughing so hard that some Republican politician would stare you in the face and tell you that? When the proof, all you need to know about wealth transfer in this country is to take a look at the last 10 years, and I don't care where you look. Any aspect of this economy, pick one you're familiar with. Anything. Healthcare, manufacturing, pick something. The cost of the Bush tax cuts, estimated by the Citizens for Tax Justice, roughly $2.5 trillion through 2010. And Think Progress put together a little thing here using data on various social spending projects from the National Priorities Project, which does these calculations for the cost of the wars that Bush got us into in Iraq and Afghanistan. And the National Priorities Project has estimated 10 other possible policies we could have paid for the same $2.5 trillion price tag of the Bush tax cuts. All of that money, all of it, ultimately went to the wealthy. The uber wealthy, because, you know, somebody said, well, Mike, you know, that the middle class got tax cuts too. Yeah, what'd they do with it? What'd they do with the tax cuts? Put a few bucks together and bought a great big old house because the mortgage industry lied to them? And see how easy it was? You want to buy a house? Pfft, no problem. How much you got down?
Nothing. Well, I got $100.
Okay. We have a beautiful $750,000 house out here for you.
But all I have is $100.
No problem. How about we give you an interest-only loan? Don't worry about it. So what did America do with those tax cuts? Because our leaders lied to us about prosperity and growth. What did we do with it? We spent it. Why not spend it? When Clinton left office, even though we didn't realize that he had loosed the dogs of hell on us with the end of Glass-Steagall, we didn't know that at the time. We just knew that, damn, Bill Clinton, I don't care if he wants to diddle around with all the interns. Well, I don't care. Look at this. Son of a bitch, look at my stock portfolio. Woo-hoo! Oh, but the hammer, or no. The blade was being slowly pulled up the guillotine. And America had its neck right at the bottom. Nobody paid attention. And then Bush comes along and said, tell you what we're going to do. We're going to cut everybody's taxes. Son of a bitch. Do you remember 2002 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6? Do you remember? You couldn't find a high school graduate who was going to go into science or engineering or any of the applied sciences. They were all going to go to work on Wall Street because, man, did you hear about so-and-so? A year out of college and he's making $300,000 a year. Woo!
Temples roll. Oh God, I wish this crazy. Screaming with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. All right. 10-year anniversary of the Bush tax cuts of 2001. He passed the second round in 2003. But it was the 2001 tax cuts that most economists took a look at and said, oh, my God, he's not really going to do that. And remember all the talk about, well, it had a sunset clause to it. So at the end of 10 years, which last year a decision had to be made, the tax cuts would run out. And, of course, this was a deliberate, a typical right-wing neo-fascist trick, corporatist trick. Tell them it's going to run out in 10 years, and then when the 10 years is up, when they try to let it run out, start screaming tax increase. There's not a politician in America with the guts right now to say, we need tax increases, or America is dead meat. I don't mean tax increases on the working class, what's left of it. I mean tax increases, massive tax increases. After insisting that corporate America pay their goddamn share that these weasels have avoided effectively since Reagan took office. You owe us, you bastards. You owe the United States of America that has sent thousands of people to their graves, Americans and not Americans, so you capitalist bastards could continue to suck this economy dry. You owe the country. Of course, the capitalists, if there's one listening right now, I say, oh, who is this little prick? Who is this guy? And they're gone. It only happens accidentally. If they're flipping through the channels on XM or Sirius, you know, who is this guy? Well, what is this? What is this little twit? Who is this guy? I don't care. I'm just kidding. I don't care who he is. So collect the corporate taxes that America has royally screwed us out of. And then change this tax code so that the first CEO that violates, I don't care who it is, that violates the new tax code goes immediately to prison. Immediately. Jesus Christ, in China, they take him out behind the factory and put a bullet in the back of their head. Not a bad idea. When you think how many people are screwed by these bankster bastards. But we are, of course, more civilized than the Chinese. So prison would be sufficient. Then, after all that's done, then notify the millionaires and billionaires, okay, your free ride is over too. Your tax rate, until we finally see black ink, is going to be 55%. Period. Don't scream. I don't care. Don't want to hear. La, 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 la. 55%. And listen to them squeal and scream. Did I mention this hour is sponsored by Roy and Paula? I don't think I did. The message, Mike and Kathy, keep up the good work. Thanks, Roy and Paula. Thank you, Paula. And Roy. 10 years. So what could have been done with the $2.5 trillion transfer of wealth from the working, the middle, the poor classes, too. Poor people have wealth. All of that transferred up into these filthy hands of the top 1%, top 2%, and especially the top one half of 1%. Gluttonous, greedy bastards who, by the way, are going to die of cancer and strokes and heart disease just like you and I will die, but think that while they're here, they might as well screw everybody they can. I'm not talking about a Wiener type or a Clinton type. I'm just saying. Screw them all. The long, the short, and the tall. Right? So what could that $2.5 trillion have done in the past 10 years? I know you've heard these little lists before. And I know when, usually when I read them, I just go, oh, Jesus Christ, really? And then I just move on to something else. It really doesn't stick. But I'll tell you what, when we come back from this break, I'll just give you 5, 6, 7 examples of what it could have done. 10 years ago, prosperity and growth. Here, let me just sign these tax cuts here. Where do I sign, Dick? I don't know where to sign. Where do I sign? Do I sign over there? Okay. Do I sign yours or just Gita? Okay. Okay. Bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad. 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 Bad.
Helping of truth, it's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Thanks to Roy and Paula, who are sponsoring this hour. The message, Mike and Kathy, keep up the good work. Thank you, Roy and Paula. Thank you very much for the sponsorship. Okay. 10 years ago, Bush signed his tax cuts into law. $2.5 trillion is how much was transferred from the poor, the working, the middle class, to the wealthy. $2.5 trillion. $2,500 billion. Here are 10 alternatives that could have been pursued instead of putting this money into the pockets of the wealthy. We could have given almost 123 million children health care every year for 10 years. We could have given 49 million people access to low-income health care every year for 10 years. We could have provided 43 million students with Pell Grants worth $5,500 every year for 10 years. We could have provided $31 million in Head Start slots for children every year for 10 years. We could have provided the Veterans Administration money for care for 30.7 million military veterans every year for 10 years. We could have provided 30 million scholarships for university students every year for 10 years. We could have hired 4 million firefighters every year for 10 years. We could have hired almost 4 million elementary school teachers every year for 10 years. We could have hired almost 4 million police officers every year for 10 years. We could have retrofitted 144 million households for wind power every year for 10 years. We could have retrofitted 54 million households for solar photovoltaic power every year for 10 years. So the trade-offs, as Think Progress points out, paints a stark picture. For the same price as the Bush tax cuts, which did nothing to help the economy, take a look around. Show me. Where's the help? From the Bush tax cuts. Where is it? for the same price as the Bush tax cuts. We could have sent tens of millions of students to college, retrofitted every household in America with the capacity to generate alternative energy, hired millions of firefighters and police officers, effectively ended our national shame of having kids who lack health care coverage. We could put millions more teachers into classrooms, but instead, oh no, the Bush tax cuts. And in 2010, Congress then went on to renew the Bush tax cuts for another additional 2 years. And the political will for the sort of public investments I just mentioned, gone. It's a pretty stark picture. What do you say to your kids, your nieces and nephews, your children, your grandkids? Now comes Tim Pawlenty, who wants to do three times the damage. He wants $8 trillion in tax cuts for the wealthy. What was the Bush thing? $2.3 trillion. Pawlenty wants to do $7.8 trillion. Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty's plan for the economy. Again, think progress. Pawlenty's plan is more radical than Paul Ryan's little attempt to destroy America. It costs three times more than the Bush tax cuts and still means a tax increase on the middle class. Pawlenty gave a speech, was this morning or yesterday in Chicago? I think it was this morning. Pawlenty's plan includes a hidden tax increase on the middle class. I'll get to that in a second. A massive personal income tax cut for millionaires and billionaires. Here we go again. When are we going to string these people up instead of giving them tax cuts? There's got to be a day. There has to be an end point. Are they going to take everything? A massive personal income tax cut for millionaires and billionaires. Citizens for Tax Justice estimates Pawlenty's plan cuts millionaires' taxes by at least 41%. Cuts them by 41%. A massive tax cut for corporations, including big oil, that would cut the corporate rate by more than 50%. But big oil doesn't pay taxes. They get tax allowances. So I guess those would go up by 50%. A complete elimination of the estate tax, capital gains tax, and tax on dividend income, which means that the wealthy never, ever would have to pay a tax income tax again. Ever. Not ever. These sluggish, rancid bastards don't work for a living. They move paper. It's all capital gains. It's all estate tax. Or it's all estate money. It's all inheritance money is what I'm trying to say. It's all stocks and bonds. It's all money manipulation. It's all dividend income. These rancid bastards don't work. They haven't worked for a living. Like what? Like what you do or used to do? A cap. I'm still talking about Pawlenty's plan. A cap on total spending that would necessitate severe cuts. Severe cuts to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and other government programs, except for the weapons industry, for war, which Pawlenty has taken off the table in favor of slashing Social Security instead. Social Security, cut it, get rid of it. There are trillions in the Social Security Trust Fund that these greedy, rancid bastards can't wait to get their hands on. price tag for all these tax cuts? More than triple the cost of the Bush tax cuts. $7.8 trillion over 10 years. In short, if you thought the Paul Ryan plan to end Medicare in order to pay for tax breaks for the wealthy and big oil didn't go far enough, then you'll love the Paul Lente plan. This is what this country has come to. This is the kind of vomit, of stinking, filthy vomit that runs for public office on the Republican side. You either have these people or you have morons like Sarah Palin or Michelle Bachmann or the pepperoni man. Palin, who will tell you to your face until her cockroaches run to Wikipedia and try to edit the page on Paul Revere to make it agree with Palin telling you that Paul Revere rode to warn the goddamn British. How do you explain to your child that this woman at one time was the Republican nominee to be Vice President of the United States? Jesus, God in heaven. Now, the way the New York Times offers what I just told you is this way. Tim Paul Lente, former governor of Minnesota, called on Tuesday for across-the-board federal spending reductions and large tax cuts for businesses and individuals, saying that such policies would drive rapid economic growth, create jobs, and reduce the federal debt. Declaring that President Obama's, quote, central planning, end quote, doesn't work, Mr. Paul Lente said that if he were elected president, he would aim for a national economic growth rate of 5%, a target he called a, quote, big positive goal, end quote, that is achievable. Central planning? Paul Lente says that Obama is involved in what? Another goddamn psychopath, Tim Paul Lente, saying that Obama is a communist? And the bobbleheads out there?
Yep, that's right. Yep. Not only is he a communist, but he's a Negro, too. And he's from Kenya. And he's a Muslim.
Go, Tim, go. Go, Tim, go. Yes.
Right from the left, it's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, and if you don't think Tim Paul Lente is insane, then you have to come to the conclusion that he is a liar. Or the third conclusion would be that he is another tool of the corporate, of the capitalists who are just hell-bent. After 80 years of trying of establishing fascism in this country, because when he gave the speech, he also talked about the linchpin of what he calls the linchpin of this economic plan of his, this economic destruction plan that he calls a better deal, a new deal. He's calling it a better deal. Oh, you filthy pig. Oh, you filthy, filthy pig. Something he calls, he's got this plan. It's called the Google test. You heard about this? He says, if you can find a good or service on the internet, then the federal government probably doesn't need to be doing it. He listed examples. The post office, the government printing office, Amtrak, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac were all built in a time in our country when the private sector did not adequately provide those products. That's no longer the case. Well, if you really get serious about the Google test, then the government would no longer need to pay for U.S. soldiers. That's Google. Military weapons or the FBI, law enforcement, firefighters, food safety. Let's get rid of that. Road construction, arbitration, Social Security, Medicare. You can find all this on the internet, right? You can Google seniors in healthcare. Does that mean Paul Lente would completely end Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security? If you Google veterans in hospital, does that mean no more VA system? You can Google pharmacy. Does that mean that no senior citizen or child would ever get assistance with their medicine from Paul Lente? They're insane. They have to be insane. Completely goddamn insane. Or worse than Hitler, where it concerns willing to murder or cause the deaths of millions of people. Paul Ryan? Tim Paul Lente? These people have the emotional capacity to commit genocide. They have the psychological components necessary to make it work. Now, I suggested some time ago people read Political Ponerology. And I doubt very many of you did. So I'll suggest it again. I'm still slogging through it. But it is, it's the kind of reading material that you come across every once in a while, but only every once in a while. You will discover why sociopaths throughout history, and especially now, lead nations into destruction, chaos, self-immolation, and finally, their end. And this is what these guys are planning. And these women, the Republican potential candidates or already declared candidates or the leadership. They're sociopaths. Not by my definition. Look up the word sociopath. Oh, I know you already have. And then look at what these people, these Republican candidates, are talking about they want to do to this country. They are trying, I think, either consciously or unconsciously, to foment armed resistance to what they're talking about. It seems as though they are pushing Americans into that. They're trying their best to push Americans into violent reaction. How much further do they have to push? But of course, they have one thing in their favor. They realize that they're talking to, collectively, the dumbest, most ill-informed, most politically illiterate group of people ever assembled in one place, the American public. So easily moved by demagoguery, so easily jerked around by real psychopaths like Limbaugh and Beck. It really is, I don't know, stupefyingly insane. And to think that we are not doing anything about it. We're letting these creatures pop out of the eggs like, I don't know, like some kind of alien creature, one after another, with their plan to destroy your life. And I don't care if you're right or left. This is what they're talking about. Your ultimate destruction. And your spouse, if you have one. Your partner, if you have one. Kids, nieces, nephews, grandkids, all of it. So what are we doing? What are we doing? Oh, let's have a real intellectual debate about all this. I know, let's just chat about it. Let's talk about it. Well, on the one hand, there is this. On the other hand, there is that. But if you look over here, you'll find that, well, the figures don't really balance, because if, on the other hand, something doesn't come up the way it should, then, of course, we can always fall back to Plan B. Now, Plan B says that, yeah, I did it.
Jay Farner here.
If you're listening via the internet, the music we're playing tonight is Best of the Eagles. You remember the Eagles, right? I know a lot of people just say, oh, well, that's really crappy music, man. That was so commercial. Hey, look, I like the Eagles. Always did. More than here's this is the Molloy program, by the way. Here's an example of what we're up against. We being middle class, working class, poor class, those of us who are not in the top, say 10%. The 90% of us on the so-called bottom. If 90% of something can be considered the bottom. It is in capitalist America. Okay, here you go. The fire that is devouring Arizona and spreading. 2,000 firefighters fighting a losing battle. What is it? Up to 500,000 acres of mountains in eastern Arizona burned. What has been named the Wallow Fire, W-A-L-L-O-W, the Wallow Fire, producing plumes of smoke visible from space. The National Weather Service has issued air quality alerts for about 5 states around this fire. Authorities have ordered the evacuations of small Arizona cities. New Mexico has ordered evacuation of a town named Luna. New Mexico is in the way of this fire. Smoke pushed by high winds has disrupted airline flights. and the blaze remains at 0% containment. National Weather Service warned critical fire weather with low humidity and high winds would continue at least through Wednesday in Arizona. The National Interagency Fire Center said similar conditions would heighten the risk of fires across the Southwest, including Arizona, New Mexico, southeastern Colorado, West Texas. Wasn't West Texas just eaten alive by its own fires? The Wallow Fire is now, we are told, the second largest in Arizona history. And it's not stopping. Oh, maybe eventually they'll get it contained. That's now. 3 years ago, February 15th, 2008. Here's a little piece from the Tribune, trib.com in Wyoming. 3 years ago, Senator John Tester, Democrat of Montana, and several other Western senators tore into U.S. Forest Service officials on Thursday over a lack of funding for wildfire preparation and suppression. Senator Tester slammed proposed cuts at a time when, quote, we're one lightning strike and a good wind away from burning the whole damn state down, end quote. Under Bush's proposed 2009 budget, the U.S. Forest Service's budget would drop $373 million. Dollars will be cut from wildfire preparedness, hazardous fuels reduction, and other fire operations. Money for state and private forestry programs, research, maintenance, management, and law enforcement also will decline. Tester said, I see the Forest Service being severely hamstrung by the amount of money they use on forest fire fighting. I think it takes away from their ability to manage. And I look at this budget and I see a decrease in the dollars that are set aside for forest fire fighting. And it tells me you're going to have to find that money somewhere else. End quote. At the Senate Energy and Natural Resource Committee hearing, Tester blasted the agency for not asking for as much money as it will likely spend on fires. Agriculture Undersecretary Mark Ray, Bush appointee, explained, the Forest Service determines how much to budget for firefighting based on an average of how much it cost over the past decade. But since fire seasons have been growing more severe recently, using a five-year average instead would mean the agency would have to ask for a larger amount. No. But Bush appointee Mark Ray defended the use of the 10-year average, saying members of Congress have implicitly expressed support for it by passing the agency's budget each year. Yes. Remember this? I remember talking about this 3 years ago. So, while Arizona burns, while Texas burned, while New Mexico may burn, there's no money. There's no money for forest fire prevention or forest fire fighting. Oh, there's money. There is money. But it's in the pockets of the goddamn rich. Because when their vacation home in the mountains of Arizona burns to a crisp, they go build another one. It's not in the hands of the rich. Where is it then? Where is that $2.3 trillion that was transferred from the rest of us to the ultra-wealthy? Where is it? If it's not in the hands of the rich, where is it? Where is it? Firefighters who are out there struggling, what do you think these 23, 22, 24-year-old forest smoke jumpers. What do you think they're paid? Do you know one of these filthy goddamn hedge fund operators will spend more for 2 weeks at a beach someplace than the smoke jumper makes in a year? And do you know that the wealthy who spend that money couldn't care less? Oh, we got some boys out there fighting the fire. Good. You boys go ahead. Yep. That's why we're paying you the 30 grand. Go ahead. You get out there and stop those fires, okay? Damn, I hope they stop before it gets to my mountain place out there. Jesus Christ, I like to go out there and shoot bighorn sheep out there. You know, they run around and what? They're on the endangered species? Nah, they're not. They are? Oh, never mind. I don't care. That doesn't mean anything to me. If I get caught, I know who to go talk to in Washington. So while Arizona now burns and pollutes the atmosphere with the smoke so that the people in the surrounding states can barely breathe, especially the ones with asthma-like conditions. And, of course, you know, trying to buy those inhalers, very few insurance companies will pay for that unless you have a goddamn good reason. Now, you can really prove you've got asthma. I mean, after all, those things cost, what, $18-$20 a pop? So if you wonder why this is going on, at least have the honesty to answer your own question. You know the answer.
Side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. One of these nights.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Where was I before I was so rudely interrupted with a break? I think it's this would be a good place to insert Prairie 2's report for tonight, titled "Wear Your School Tie to the Meltdown." I was in the middle of something, was I, Kathy? I forget. "Wear Your School Tie to the Meltdown." Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany dropped in on President Obama today. They had dinner in the Rose Garden. He gave her the Medal of Freedom for her life's work. If they talked about their respective views on economics or science, they didn't mention it publicly. Merkel grew up a communist in East Germany, and her school tie was red. She has a PhD in physics and speaks fluent Russian. Merkel now leads United Germany from the center right. Obama, who was raised by New Deal liberals from Kansas, went to an Ivy League school with lots of rich kids who now run Wall Street. He became a constitutional lawyer and governs from the center right, despite being an anti-colonial Mao Mao Muslim commie liberal. Merkel's response to the world economic meltdown caused by Obama's school chums down on Wall Street was a full-blown New Deal-style Keynesian economics takeover of Germany's economy by their government. Germany operates on economic principles put in place by Truman and his Marshall Plan and doesn't believe in letting the markets decide the fate of Germany. Obama's response to the economic meltdown was a half-hearted stimulus package largely dependent on tax cuts based on the voodoo economics of Ronald Reagan without Reagan's massive government spending or his tax increases. Reagan increases.
What's he talking about?
Merkel's response to the multiple reactor meltdowns at Fukushima was to order the immediate shutdown of all of Germany's GE Mark I reactors. The U.S. has many more of this type reactor, and President Obama ordered inspections of safety equipment at the plants. After review of the GE Mark I design, Chancellor Merkel ordered all of them to be decommissioned. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission reported that much of the safety equipment at the U.S. reactors either didn't exist, had been diverted to other uses, didn't work, or failed during testing. Obama issued an official statement and took no action. Last week, Angela Merkel, remember she's a physicist, she announced the complete end of nuclear power in Germany in 10 years, citing the complete helplessness of an advanced country like Japan in the ongoing crisis. The NRC in the United States is moving swiftly to pressure local, municipal, and volunteer fire departments to sign formal agreements that they will respond to emergencies at U.S. nuclear plants. Yes! President Obama is continuing the practice of his predecessors and has no policy on energy or economics. His school chums can take care of it. They have the right tie. Prairie2.com. Well, by the way, while we have been chit-chatting here, this is from 55 minutes ago. NATO continues to pound Tripoli. It's Wednesday there. Hours after Muammar Gaddafi defiantly addressed the nation in the wake of the Western Alliance's most punishing airstrikes, he went on national television. He was screaming, "We will not kneel. We have one choice. We will stay in our land, dead or alive, death, victory. It does not matter. We are not surrendering. We are stronger than your weapons and your planes. The voices of the Libyan people are stronger than the sounds of explosions." He said the rebels who have risen up against him are bastards. Minutes after he spoke, another explosion shook the capital as NATO apparently launched another strike. It goes on here. Daylight, NATO raids have been rare and signal an intensification of the alliance's bid to drive Gaddafi from power. Ambulances could be heard racing through the city during the day-long raids that shook the ground and sent thundering sound waves across the capital. Gaddafi's spokesman Musa Ibrahim said, "Instead of talking to us, they're bombing us, they're going mad, they're losing their heads." He said the daylight strikes were particularly terrifying because families were separated during the day. Libyan school children are taking final exams at the end of the school year. Ibrahim said, "Tens of thousands of children are in Tripoli. You can imagine the shock and horror of the children. You can imagine the horror of parents who can't check on their children who are far away." Obama said during a joint news conference with Angela Merkel, "Gaddafi must step down and hand power to the Libyan people, and the pressure will only continue to increase until he does."
Hypocrites and liars.
The quality of mercy is not great.
Senators and lawyers.
The quality of mercy is not great.
Victims and heroes.
The quality of mercy is not great.
Murderers and martyrs.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
I was standing.
25 before the hour. I'm really so disgusted with Republicans. But before I get to that, Obama also was meeting, was it today? Or will meet? No, it was today. Obama met with the Crown Prince of Bahrain, I guess before Angela Merkel popped in to get her Medal of Freedom, or whatever it's called. He met with the Crown Prince of Bahrain at the White House. And Hussein Abdullah, the Director of Americans for Democracy and Human Rights in Bahrain, said, quote, "There will be no news conference, so there will likely be no pictures together. But the reality is that Obama is meeting Salman al-Khalifa. While he's been depicted as the more enlightened element of the ruling family, the fact is that he is the head of the military, and it is escalating its killing of protesters as the regime escalates a crackdown, jailing most of the opposition. In his Mideast speech last month, Obama said that the U.S. is, quote, committed to Bahrain's security, end quote. That seems to mean that the U.S. will continue to back the despotic al-Khalifa regime, though they will try to come up with a phony political process. And this isn't just about Bahrain. If Bahrain makes real democratic progress, it will spur movements in the other Gulf monarchies. Can't let that happen. Meanwhile, dozens of doctors and nurses who treated injured anti-government protesters during the now months of unrest and violence in Bahrain, doctors and nurses went on trial yesterday. So Obama knew about this, on charges that these doctors and nurses had participated in efforts to overthrow the monarchy. 47 health professionals were arraigned in a closed hearing in a security court. The Shiite majority in that country has been protesting to demand greater freedom, equal rights, and an elected government, not this Sunni monarchy. Well, during the violence, the medical professionals said it was their duty to treat everyone. And they rejected accusations that treating protesters was akin to supporting their cause. These are doctors and nurses. And now they are detainees. They're under arrest. They're going to trial. And they probably, some of them, face the death penalty. Efforts to overthrow the monarchy? Are you serious? What is that, 30 days in jail? I don't think so. That was yesterday. Today, Tuesday, Obama met and tried to hide the meeting from the cameras with the Crown Prince of Bahrain, who is also the head of the military. And it is the military that has put on trial 47 nurses and doctors. The Bahrain monarchy is not dissimilar all that much from the Christian crazy people in this country who want to murder doctors. At least in Bahrain, they're going to be given a phony trial. But in this country, they just want to murder doctors who take care of their patients if part of that care might include an abortion. So what's the difference between the Bahrain royal family and the Christian crazies in this country? if NATO in their airstrikes in Afghanistan and Pakistan kill civilians, and especially children, with their missile attacks, there usually is some sort of pro forma apology. Oh, we're sorry. Oh, my goodness. You know, I'm a dad, too. I'm real sorry. I ordered the airstrikes in your village, but only because we knew there was a Taliban or an Al-Qaeda leader. What? Nine of your extended family children were, geez. We're so sorry. What we've worked out with the Karzai government, is $3,500 a kid. So nine kids. That's around 30 grand, I guess. We're so sorry. We killed your children. We really are. We never mean to kill your children. We're trying to kill your leaders, but not your children. We're sorry. Honest to God, we're sorry. What happens when they kill children in Libya? To whom do the apologies go in Libya? Because unlike Hamid Karzai, Muammar Gaddafi is not someone that we support anymore. So when these missiles, also launched by NATO, when these missiles hit in downtown Tripoli, and if you have seen some of the video today, it looks almost, not quite, well, let me rephrase that. It looks a wee bit like our nighttime attack on Baghdad all those years ago. Remember that? Shock and awe. The purpose of that was to show those Middle Easterners what a really muscular, manned-up military will do to a dictator we don't like. Excuse me, a dictator we can't use anymore. But I was just wondering, after I read the article here about the bombing raids now on Wednesday in Tripoli, and a government spokesman there saying, you know, this is really bad because our children are doing their end-of-year exams. Well, he's got to be lying, doesn't he? I mean, after all, it's Libya. They're just a bunch of communists. Well, they're not communists. Well, they're a bunch of... What are they? Well, they're terrorists. They blew a jetliner out of the sky. That's probably true, but an anti-Cuban terrorist who blew a jetliner out of the sky was given sanctuary in the United States until he died a few months ago. Remember that? Posada? Was that his name? Was Posada the one, or was it Carias? It doesn't matter. Don't email me. I don't care. I'm just wondering, to whom do you apologize if you are a NATO war organizer, and you have decided that you are going to bomb the breath out of Tripoli, and children's body parts start to fly around as they did in Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan and Somalia and the occupied territories and would you accept an apology from a foreign general or military commander? Would you accept an apology that was offered after your children were burned alive? And the last memory you had of your six-year-old was holding him while he screamed in agony until he died because he was hit He was collateral damage in a missile strike in, oh, I don't know, suburban Atlanta or the outskirts of Seattle. Would you just say, oh, you're sorry? Oh, thank you. I'm so grateful that you're sorry that you murdered my child. Down a picture as soon as he got elected, took down a painting that was commissioned by the Department of Labor that showed working people struggling to make a living. You remember? And he got to be governor, this Republican. I don't know how you people did it, but I hope you get what you wanted. But he had the picture taken down. You know, a painting honoring working people? A Department of Labor? Are you out of your mind? Well, Scott Walker, Wisconsin's fascist, has done him one better. Now, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, he has ordered a painting removed that depicted three Wisconsin children. They were modeled on real children. One had been homeless. One came from a low-income family. And a third had lost family members in a drunk driving accident. Now, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the painting was one of numerous pieces of art commissioned by the fund that operates the government's, the governor's mansion. Paintings that were intended to remind the governor, any governor, of the constituents he or she represents. In this case, three little kids. Here's what the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel said about the painting by artist David Lenz, L-E-N-Z. Quote, in an interview, Lenz said he carefully selected the three children portrayed in Wishes in the Wind. That's the name of the photo and or the painting. And if you look at it, it's three little kids blowing bubbles. The African-American girl featured in a Journal Sentinel column on homelessness spent 3 months at the Milwaukee Rescue Mission with her mother. The Hispanic girl is a member of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Milwaukee. And the Caucasian boy's father and brother were killed by a drunken driver in 2009. The artist explained in an email to the newspaper, quote, the homeless, Central City children, and victims of drunk drivers normally do not have a voice in politics. This painting was an opportunity for future governors to look these three children in the eye and, I hope, contemplate how their public policies might affect them and other children like them. I guess, the artist concluded, that was a conversation Governor Walker did not want to have. End quote. Governor Scott Walker looking at a painting depicting three children, all of whom had major crises in their lives that some piece of human waste like Scott Walker can't even contemplate? So how does he react? The way a Republican would do, the way a sociopath would do. Take the goddamn painting down. Take it down. Get it out of my governor's mansion. There's no room here for that commie crap. Jesus God. A spokesman for the governor insisted that the replacement of Lenz's work, oh, he replaced it with a picture painting of a bald eagle. A spokesman said that the replacement with a Civil War-themed painting depicting a bald eagle was not a criticism of the painting of the children. No, 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 no. Not at all. It was to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the War of Northern Aggression. Yeah, it was Maine's Republican Governor Paula Page demanded that a union-friendly mural inside the state's Department of Labor be removed because it wasn't pro-business. You know, when you start doing this, when you start controlling art, when you start censoring art, you have identified yourself as a totalitarian, and you, if you censor or prohibit art, the free expression of art, then you are fully capable of murdering people with remote missiles. You are capable. Well, you assume the power to make people believe absurdities. And along with that comes the power eventually to make them commit atrocities. Who said that? Who's that a quote from? Scott Walker ditches symbolic painting of homeless, low-income kids. This report comes from Mother Jones online. A trustee for the library connected Walker's anti-union bill with the painting brouhaha. John Gerda, a trustee, said, quote, "This is indicative of Walker's tone deafness. The point is, this is not Walker's house. This is Wisconsin's house. This is the governor's mansion. This was commissioned by an organization that was here long before Scott Walker came in and will be here long after he is gone." Well, Mr. Gerda, then go get the painting, put it back up, and if Walker sends somebody to take it back down, punch their goddamn lights out. Just punch them. Bap. Bap. Bap, 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 bap. We'll be back after the break. The hour, Malloy Show. You're still here, huh? What do I have to do to drive you away from this program? Prairie, too, weighed in here with his take on what happened to that $2.5 trillion Bush tax cuts that were handed to the wealthy 10 years ago. Prairie, too, writes, where did the $2.5 trillion go? Well, you could say it went entirely for the rich to buy treasury bonds. In fact, they bought even more than that. So clearly they didn't need the money from tax cuts, as they had extra trillions already to buy treasury bonds. The rich were already so rich from the Reagan tax cuts that they simply couldn't spend anymore. It's all about creating a crisis so that they could end democracy. We're not broke, just stupid. You can lead a bull with a string if he doesn't know you can't. What? That one got past me there, Bruce. All righty then. Hey, remember, I don't know if you, you got to be over a certain age to remember this. When I was a kid, my grandparents and even my parents occasionally would, on a Sunday, go for a Sunday drive.
What?
Yeah, a Sunday drive. I know. Jesus Christ, Malloy, how old are you? Sunday drive. And you can't do that now because I'm talking back when there were real roads and not all interstates. No interstates? Are you in your 80s? Anyway, hold your snotty comments, will you please? In Northwest Ohio, where I grew up, I-75 was there, but very few people took it because, you know, it was dangerous. The old people didn't trust the freeway. You know, what they call it, the expressway. They just didn't trust it. I used to go on Sunday rides with mostly my grandparents, sometimes my parents. And my grandparents would do this. They would, my grandmother would pack a picnic lunch, most of which came from her garden or the hen house. And off we'd go. This would be after church. This would be sometime between 1 o'clock and 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Drive out of Findlay, Ohio, about 10, 12 miles, which would take about an hour, and find a place to have a picnic. Well, the places that were available then were places that were that were built during the Depression by the WPA. They were called roadside parks. They're all gone now. I don't know. Maybe we were up in the mountains of Georgia here over the weekend, and we saw a couple of just it looked like something out of a time warp. Back off the road in a little clearing, the remains of a picnic table. But in the 40s and 50s, the 1940s, the 1950s, to go stop at one of these picnic tables, one of these roadside parks, was a big deal. You'd pull your car off, and there might even be a public restroom there with flush toilets. Can you believe that? And a picnic table, maybe two. And you would have your picnic lunch. It was great. Well, those are all gone now. What we have now, and they were in the process of becoming popular in the 50s, are state parks. We have some incredible state parks here in the foothills of North Georgia Mountains, and a lot of our state parks bump up against Chattahoochee National Forest. We have an awful lot of North Georgia that is national forest. And it's where the Appalachian Trail begins. It's a really rugged country. Not rugged like Colorado. I mean rugged like Appalachia in the North Georgia Mountains. The reason I bring this up, you can say goodbye to your state parks just like my generation said goodbye to the roadside parks. Only we didn't realize we were saying goodbye to it. They were there. We were kids. We grew up. They were gone. I don't think there was ever a time when somebody said, let's go take down all those little signs. They had signs around. that said, well, interestingly, roadside park, 2 miles. So when we were kids, they were there. When we became adults, they were gone. There was no announcement. There are plenty of announcements right now about the fact that state parks are ending. As the Times puts it, and this is written from Deception Pass State Park in Washington, state of Washington. And the Times points out that as the summer season gets underway, budget-strapped state parks across the country are either closing or pursuing what the Times calls creative and sometimes controversial solutions simply to stay open. Many of these state parks are imposing new fees. That's true. And in North Georgia, it used to be the state parks used to be free. And then a few years ago, and during the first Bush meltdown, by that I mean his budget, where he decided to slash everything from the National Forest Service, and which I believe funded or sent some of the money to the states for these state parks. Maybe not. But the national parks all of a sudden have fees in them, too. Anyway, raising fees seems to be the only way to save the state parks. Volunteers. And the one that is really thrilling and really shows the ingenuity and the exceptionalism of the American spirit. By God, when we're faced with the problem of state parks not having money to stay open because the wealthy must have their billions and trillions so that they can go on a junket someplace to Europe or the South Sea Islands or Indonesia or on safari into Africa or wherever, the wealthy must have their privilege, so the common folk lose their state parks. Ah, but not to worry. Do you know what one of the plans is? To start drilling for oil and gas beneath hiking trails and picnic pavilions. Can you believe this? Like in Ohio, one of the oil and gas efforts is in Ohio, where the legislature there is ready to approve a bill that would allow drilling for oil and gas in the shale beneath some state parks. Lawmakers say parks would directly benefit from the revenue. You see, the number of full-time Ohio parks employees has declined by nearly 40% over the last decade. Well, yeah, no money to pay them. And the state says it now faces, Ohio faces $1 billion in delayed repairs and maintenance. Oh, well, John Kasich, you miserable son of a bitch Republican governor, aren't you going to fix it? I mean, the working class in Ohio, the last thing they can do is go to a state park. And now you, you pig, you're going to allow the legislature to put in drilling equipment? Why, of course, Mike. Calm down. Paul Wolf, president of Friends for the Preservation of Ohio State Parks, said, I don't want to see the parks become refineries or anything like that, but it's a tough decision to make. If parks deteriorate, what good is keeping drilling out of the parks? What? If parks deteriorate, what good? This guy is a friend of the state parks? What the hell do Ohio state parks' enemies look like? More on this when we come back. 22 past the hour. State parks are going to disappear. They're going to be privatized in Ohio. They're passing a law that says drilling for gas and oil in state parks shall be allowed. Jack Shaner of the Ohio Environmental Council said in a statement, quote, under park rules in Ohio, it is unlawful for a camper to tack a clothesline to a tree. But under this bill, it would be okay for a driller to chop his way through the forest and set up a drilling rig. There's no need to point out the asininity and the stupidity and the greed and the filth of the Ohio legislature and the governor. State parks were designed to provide the average people with a place to, you know, get away from it all, get out in the fresh air, go for a swim in a lake. The Tennessee Valley Authority project here in the middle of the southeast created I don't know how many, but an enormous number of lakes that were then used for hydroelectric power and eventually nuclear power. You know, helping to generate power. But the lakes that were created, there are some incredible lakes in this area, in the southeast. We were on one of them on Sunday, Lake Nottoli, which is up near Blue Ridge, Georgia, Blairsville, Georgia. Still crystal clear water. And it's ending. It's ending because the wealthy must have everything. There is not enough money to fund the continuing maintenance of state parks. So another plan is to charge admission. Now, there are parking fees now, but admission, some of these states are thinking about, you know, $10 a visit or $40 a year. The obvious pressure is to buy the $40 ticket. But $10 for one day, what happens? I mean, if you're an unemployed, working, or middle-class family, and you live near a state park with hiking trails that haven't yet had the drilling rigs set upon them, and there may be a lake where you can teach your daughter to fish, and there may be a place where you can take your son out in a canoe, or, you know, whatever. But if it's $10 a visit, how many visits can you make? So you're forced to buy the $40 ticket, but wait a minute, $40? Richard Just, the chief planner of the Idaho Department of Parks and Recreation and the immediate past president of the National Association of Recreation Resource Planners. He said, quote, well, we're catering more to middle America now, to middle class recreationists. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, the parks will be easily accessible and affordable to the middle class. And, you know, we just have to do this. Last year, the governor of Idaho, Butch Otter, suggested eliminating the parks department altogether. Just get rid of it. Colorado just approved merging its parks department with the Division of Wildlife. Arizona and Florida are considering privatizing their state parks. How does that grab you? And here in Georgia, parks financing has been cut by almost 50% since 2008, said Becky Kelly, the parks director here in Georgia. Georgia parks are in the middle of what Mrs. Kelly calls repositioning. We are in the process of repositioning here in Georgia. We expect that our repositioning will be completed by 2015, and our plan is to make our state parks financially independent by raising revenues from sources like parking fees and overnight Father's Day packages at golf courses in state parks. When I was a kid, we had roadside parks to go to. And sometime between the time I was a teenager and I became an adult, they disappeared. And now we're going to lose our state parks.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's More Mike Malloy.
A big hit back in 50-something. I don't know. Do you know who recorded that? I think it was the Hugo Winterhalter Orchestra. How's that? Huh? Email from American Jackson regarding Pawlenty and the rich and the destruction of the middle class. American Jackson writes, it works 100% of the time. Republicans don't give a damn about the deficit. They hate Medicare, except for Medicare Part D, never paid for, that put money in the coffers of the drug companies, and Medicare Advantage, which transfers wealth, Medicare funds, to the health insurance bloodsuckers. They hate Social Security that pays for itself, but would back a risky privatization that does nothing to reduce the deficit or extend the life of the trust fund. But the Wall Streeters will take their rake and get even richer. And no one mentions Ryan Care does nothing to reduce the deficit. But the rich will get richer at the expense of Medicare patients, so they love it. Tax cuts for small businesses? They hate those. Tax cuts for multinationals? They love those. Tax cuts for the upper 2% in income? Absolutely! Cash for clunkers and the first-time home buyers tax credits, two cuts that actually helped the economy and gave a working person a break. They hated them! Pawlenty is just their latest lunatic. The wealthiest 4% in this country have $40 trillion in assets. What are they going to do with another $8 trillion? They have so much money now, they don't know what to do with it. Companies hire only when they have to. They hire when they get orders. They hire when they have customers. No one is going to hire because they got a tax cut. American Jackson. I don't think I've read one of his emails before. I think it's a he. Thank you, American Jackson. Stephen from Burbank writes in, Mike, in the 60s, there was a tough-as-nails politician whose campaign operative complained about lies being hurled at his opponent. Lyndon Johnson replied, quote, it doesn't matter if it's true or not. Let's just make the son of a bitch deny it. Andrew Breitbart, the underwear sniffer, I added that, learned this lesson. Well, too bad he thinks he got a base hit when the umpire knows he reached first base on an error. Wiener had the ball and he threw it away. There are other newsworthy stories, one of them being that before 9/11, there was a dead body found in a politician's office. That would be Morning Joe, wouldn't it? Remember that? Joe Scarborough? If a drooling, barking, panting underwear sniffer really wants to make a name for himself as a journalist, let her rip. The bases are loaded, nobody out, and all I can see is a guy standing near the plate, outside the box, scratching his crotch. Stephen from Burbank. Yeah, well, remember Gary Condit? That was 10 years ago, wasn't it? You know, speaking of 10 years ago, you better brace yourself. You better brace yourself. This September the 11th is the 10th anniversary of the attack on this country engineered by the Bush administration. Brace yourself, because every one of these pig politicians, especially on the right, and probably a few on the left, mostly on the right, well, there is no left, on the right or the far right, let's say the far right, the Republicans, the baggers, and the rest of these jack-legged jerks, they're going to take the 10th year anniversary of the Bush crime family engineered attack on this country, and it's going to drive you crazy. I will guarantee you that by September 12th, you're going to be trying to rip your own eyes out. Now, I decided to let the wiener thing wait until this last segment. But from alternet.org, an open letter. Hey, media, here's my beef with Wienergate. Listen. If you're a member of the elite media, like you are Chuck Todd or Bob Schieffer or Jake Tapper or George Will, please take a moment to pop over to a memorandum online and check out the reaction of various media outlets to the Anthony Wiener scandal. Okay, now if you've done that, I want you to come back here and answer me this. Why didn't you a-holes treat David Vitter, or especially John Ensign, this way, huh? Why did David Vitter have an easy time getting reelected without having to listen to you guys question his morals 24 hours a day? And why wasn't John Ensign run out of the village on a rail for making a mess of the place? Aren't senators more than four times as powerful as congressmen? Isn't it a juicier story when a sex scandal involves hypocrisy as well as lying? You left Ensign alone. You left Vitter alone. Hell, you barely even reported it when Ensign resigned, but for weeks you've been hounding a comparative nobody. Why? Are you puppets controlled by Andrew Breitbart or Matt Drudge or Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh? Do you have minds of your own? And this isn't new. Remember how you treated Gary Condit? He got more press than shark attacks. And you know what? Turns out he didn't have anything to do with the disappearance of Chandra Levy. And no one ever said a word about Pappy Bush's mistresses. That wouldn't have been prudent. How about Billy Carter? He had to be such a big embarrassment to President Carter, but no one cared that Reagan's kids weren't even on speaking terms with him half the time. The press might have a liberal bias in the sense that they actually paid attention in college and learned something, but they treat liberals like dreck and give a pass to the most disgraceful and even criminal behavior by Republicans. How is Marco Rubio even a senator? Isn't it because you didn't do your jobs exposing him as a crook and not letting him wiggle away? Tom DeLay ran an openly corrupt and criminal enterprise right in front of your noses for years, and he never got the Charlie Rangel treatment. I'm all for relentlessly pursuing corrupt or immoral politicians and humiliating them as an example to others. I just want some consistency. Why isn't Tom Coburn getting hounded for serving as John Ensign's bagman? Let me see 24/7 coverage of that dirt bag. Do your jobs. From alternet.org. Yeah, Gary Condit, remember that summer? That was the summer of 2001? It was relentless. It's such a footnote in history now because the only thing that got it off the front pages, these dirty, filthy, rotten, disgusting, smelly, stinking television cable organizations and over-the-air broadcast networks, all they could do is talk about Gary Condit. It ruined his life, his career, his family. He kept denying any involvement whatsoever. And the only thing that managed to erase the story from these pig bastards who run television was the George Bush, Dick Cheney engineered attack on New York and Washington. On September 10th, Condit, Condit, Condit. On September 11th, oh my God, how did this happen? Were we asleep? How did they manage to launch attacks on New York? What's going on? There are more jetliners in the air? Why isn't somebody doing something? Oh, we don't want to hear this. We want to hear about Gary Condit.
Licking Bush might be nice, and I'll volunteer for Congolese rice. And Colin Powell likes a blonde that's stacked, and Rumsfeld wants his fatty smack. And Mr. Cheney, he gets quite a thrill if when you pop his cork, you shout, oil spill.
Before the hour. All right. It was Percy Faith, Kathy, not Hugo Winterhalter. Thank you, Roz. Even the name sounds like it's from the 50s. Percy Faith. Ah. From Carol in Minnesota. Regarding Tim Pawlenty, Carol writes, this guy is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the Grover Norquist wing of the Republican Party and has been since he started out. I don't know how they suck these men and women in and keep them sucking the conservative milk, but they do. Seems they pull them in when they're in college, fill their heads with this bird blank, and then sick them on the world. I wish I knew what they are promised to sell their soul, but it must be good. Pawlenty has never written anything himself. It's handed to him from ALEC or one of the group think tanks, and then he's sent out to sell it. I could write reams, but you know the story. He wrecked Minnesota and now is sent out to wreck the country for the men behind the curtain. Carol, a Minnesotan. Yeah, I often wonder where these people come from also. They just don't seem to have the same Well, they have to be amoral to begin with. I almost said they don't seem to have the same moral sense as an average person, an average normal person. Okay, that can be picked apart. I realize that. Let me rephrase it. Republicans, teabaggers, right-wingers seem to be and are totally amoral. And I think the reason is because as children, they had whatever opportunity to develop a moral sense or a sense of ethics driven out of them, either by phony religious teaching or by parents who were abusive on some level, psychologically abusive, physically abusive. You know, when you teach a kid that he is powerless, he either remains that way all his life or eventually will try to kill you to get away. Or he'll run screaming out of the house when he's 16 or something. But Republicans, to me, not only do they demagogue these issues, not only are they amoral, but they display a learned helplessness that they want everyone else to adopt. This is the way it is. I can't do anything. The state parks have got to go. Medicare's got to go. Everything's got to go. These are not billionaires. But as Carol points out, it's something that is driven into these people. Bachman, Palin, Beck. Just some kind of warped amorality that is just, well, sociopathology. A sociopath has no moral sense either. Nothing. Zero. Nothing. Everything is subject to a cost-benefit analysis, because when their moral sense was denied them, they were given instead a cost-benefit analysis sheet. Even their religions, the people who do this who are Christian or Jewish or Muslim, you can tell they are the same way. Their religious sense is totally amoral. Cost effective. Of course, the Catholics got that down to a science. They will tell you the cost of all your sins. I mean, literally tell you the cost of your sins after they break the sins down. Well, are they mortal? Are they venial? Venal? Okay. All right. You did what? You masturbated. Okay. 10 Hail Marys, 6 Our Fathers, and, don't do it again. Cost-benefit analysis, that's all. And the Protestants do. I mean, the Protestants don't have that direct cost-benefit sheet. You know, the priests don't have that, you know. The preachers don't. The priests do. The priests know exactly what to prescribe when you go into the confessional. So not only does it teach you cost-benefit analysis, but it takes away any responsibility on your part. Oh, they talk about responsibility, but they frame it in terms of guilt, not responsibility in terms of do the right thing. What's the right thing? What's the right thing? 10 Hail Marys, 6 Our Fathers, and an act of contrition. Oh. We're out of time. Okay, we have 10 seconds. Do you think the feeding frenzy on poor old Anthony Weiner has ended yet? Huh? Isn't it interesting how the liberal media destroys liberals? I'll see you tomorrow night, all right? Take care and keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
The IRS.